Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
The following big interview was posted in full for our socios, our members, our friends, our supporters at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. And that was last season, 2019-20. Sign up there and you'll get every interview we produce before it's released on the main feed, plus the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You'll also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. And what's more, you'll be supporting us. You'll be keeping this independent podcast on the road. Thank you. There'll be cynics amongst you who think that the brilliant Eniola Aluko, title winner in Italy, is only on the big interview because her brilliant brother, Sonny Aluko, played for the Mighty Dandies and scored in a 2-2 draw with Bayern Munich. No. I can't even attest that Aberdeen gets mentioned at all. Okay, it comes up a couple of times. Eni gives to us a brilliant perspective on the impact of and stories behind the 2019 World Cup. You're right, she was broadcasting it, not playing in it. We touch on the fact about whether she should have been trying to help England get beyond the semi-final and into the final. Listen on, you'll hear her answer. Eni also talked brilliantly about the perspective she gained while writing her book. It's a cathartic perspective on the pivotal time in her career when, over a course of more than 18 months, Eni fought a culture around the England coaching team. It's a fight she won at a cost. But when she reflects on that and what it's done to her and how she feels now, I guarantee you'll be interested and a little bit surprised. Eni Aluko, double winner in Italy and England for Chelsea, lawyer, pioneer, brilliant analyst. She's a perfect fit for the big interview.
I know, like, you can say it's nuts because of what you've had to go through in order. Yeah. I mean, and also the cruelty of loving your time and developing at Charlton, and the club disappearing overnight, and this happens in the States too. But to my way of thinking, particularly now, and I, listen, for my small part, I was coaching Glasgow University women's team in 1990.
Oh, really?
Badly, I'd say. But I was doing my best. And I've always just seen it that if football is played well, you watch it irrespective
of gender. Well, that's how it should be.
It feels to me, that seems natural. But also, if you have a passionate addiction to football, then
you'll watch anything.
If it's good, I'll watch. But now I see we're looking at elite athletes, elite people too. So, for example, you were in the States. I watched an appreciation of, I mean, and they are ahead of everybody, not just in ability, but mentality.
Yes.
In the final two games, the semi-final and the final, you saw things that we sat recently with a pro footballer saying, it was Trent Alexander-Arnold, I was in Switzerland and France last week with him, and he was saying, the first Champions League final, a year ago in Kiev against Madrid, we didn't know how to win it and they did. They knew it. I said, define that. And he did. The Americans in those two games knew exactly how to win.
I think they knew they were going to win before that. From the get-go, they knew they were going to win this tournament. And they had the pressure of the nation on them. They have a lot of haters. They've got the whole equal pay thing. They're up against the US Soccer Federation, which is a very powerful federation. Those girls are powerful women in every sense of the word, and knew that anyone in our way, we're moving out of the way, we're going to win. And that's the difference, I think, between England and France, Germany and USA. That level of sort of unapologeticness that people are a bit coy about with women's sport. People still expect it to be nicey-nicey and cushy-cushy. They're like, we're not here for that. You know, look at the way they celebrated 13-0 against Thailand. You know, people were uncomfortable with that.
But not me, I agreed with you.
I think that reflected how ruthless they approach this tournament. And that's what you've got to be.
Even if you're running away against the team, you do your job, you push the button every time you've got a chance, and you don't pat them on the head and sorry, it's 13-0. Doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah.
Men's, women's, boys, girls, football, you play to win. And all right, taunt, you maybe don't taunt.
Yeah, or whatever. There's games.
But this idea that was sort of the wrong thing to be doing, I think that separates mentality.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also game management. I mean, I think it was viewed with distaste in the UK, I saw, when, you know, the Americans would be clever about how much time was taken over something or whether a foul was a foul or not. People wouldn't have been saying that in a men's game, in my opinion.
I think they would, actually. I think that's what makes it great now, because the levels of opinion, I mean, the fact that celebration divided such opinion was great, because that's what it would do in the men's game.
Mm-hmm.
If Raheem Sterling is doing knee slides at 13-0 against a weaker international nation, I think you probably have the same level of debate. And that's what I love about the fact that women's football now, people aren't seeing it as, you know, women's football, oh, let's treat it nice. They're seeing it as football and universal debate, and people are falling out about it.
And intensity of criticism is necessary too.
Intensity of criticism, like, that's what we wanted for such a long time. We've wanted the press to cover us. We've wanted the press to write about us, good or bad. And as players, we've got to kind of be ready for, you know, ready for the good or bad. And as you said, we're professional athletes now. So that comes with a level of scrutiny that, you know, you've got to be ready for.
You mentioned Raheem. He was going to come up in this because it's my perspective that he's an extraordinary footballer who's been coached by one of the best, the male equivalent of Rita, perhaps.
Of course, his
trajectory is extraordinary, and the way in which he's been treated, particularly by branches of the UK media, has been outrageous, and it got me angry, and therefore I'm putting out there to you my point of view. Maybe you disagree, but I watched the way that Rapinoe was treated post World Cup. There was one moment at a presentation when the crowd is singing her name and she gets up, acknowledges it, does a little dance, sit down. It was a deluge of look at her making this all about her. Won again at an award ceremony immediately after winning, becoming world champions again. Signing a young kid's autograph while not actually looking him in the eye as if she should have been hugging him or something. The kid gets his autograph. She's done him that nicety. And there seemed to be, and she spoke, I thought, in an uplifting, brilliant way, but also the message, eloquent for sure. What she's saying, you know, touched everybody, whether you watch women's football or you don't, men's football or you don't. And immediately what that seemed to draw out was a backlash, a readiness to get after her, maybe because she's seen as too outspoken.
Yeah, yeah.
But I equated the treatment of Raheem and Megan Rapinoe.
I think that's a great equation, and I think it's so multifaceted, because I think as athletes, when you put yourself out there on things that are non-sporting, it is a guarantee that you will be attacked. It's just a guarantee. Because people don't see you as deserving of having a voice in that sphere, no matter how eloquent you are. Oftentimes you can get the benefit of it because people go, oh, actually,
that's refreshing.
You know, that's refreshing, yeah. You know. But the reality is that we have these huge platforms where one tweet can change the world. So it's a decision. And, you know, I've had many arguments with footballers and different athletes about, well, do you just want to be the athlete that scored a lot of goals? Or do you want to be someone that actually, when it mattered and when things affected your team and affected you, you spoke up about it? You don't always have to speak up. I don't always speak up when something happens, but there's pointed moments when you can, and it can actually change the conversation. So I'm not at all surprised to see the level of backlash from Megan Rapinoe and Raheem Sterling. But I think in the long run, those are the athletes you remember. And one thing I say in the book is that my mom always taught me about being able to use attributes like being hard-headed and strong and vocal for the benefit of yourself and other people.
Well, by the time that people are listening to this version of The Big Interview, they'll be able to go out and buy They Don't Teach This, your life story. I mean, there are a number of things we could pick on, but I want to try and make this seamless in that the World Cup you were commentating on in the States, where should you have been playing? I'm talking about form first.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a debate that I could have been selected. I had a conversation with Phil Neville in early 2018 in Russia, actually. I was in the ITV hotel with all the sort of lads. I call them lads, but they were actually my heroes growing
up. For example.
You know, Ali McCoist, Ryan
Quite
Giggs.
A lad. Little to say for himself.
Gary Neville.
Game of chess in bed at 9.
Yeah. So I happened to be able to have a chat with Phil Neville at the time and said, listen, you know, where am I at with it?
Yeah. Like,
either way, it's fine. My life's moved on. I'm very happy with my life. And, you know, I have 102 caps. So in a way, I already feel like the glass is already full. But I'm still playing and you know, I feel that I can still contribute. And he very much said, listen, the door's still open. If you perform well, like any other striker, you could be selected. Now, oftentimes, you know, I like to look people in the eye and believe that that's, you know, that's genuine. But oftentimes, a lot of coaches give players lines, and you don't really know how genuine it is. Now, I'd like to think it was genuine at the time, but I remember thinking, well, if I do go in and bang goals in at Juventus, are you gonna risk? And I call it a risk because, you know, I think it's safe to say there's a lot of strong opinion about, you know, my whole fallout with England and the FA. And so I think it's a risk in the sense that there'll be so much media attention around that potential selection. But ultimately, we're talking about football.
You scored 11.
It was 14 in the league.
Okay.
I scored 14 goals in the league, 16 in all competitions. I think finished third.
Job done.
And we won the double in a team where have as big a name as Chelsea or Bayern Munich or anyone else, in a league where we only won the league by 1 point. Certainly more competitive than France or, you know, or in England. So if I was arguing, if, you know, if I was sort of outside of myself and arguing for me, I think I'd have a strong case.
Good case.
So I think the long answer is, I think that question is probably better answered by Phil Neville, but it doesn't help to think that there's other factors that stopped me, that would have stopped me being selected outside of just pure football.
Okay, I'm going to go to the point I was making and then come back to what you said there, because in They Don't Teach This, the World Cup you were commentating on for Fox, where you could easily have been playing, the World Cup would have been better, Norway would have been better, if Ada Hegerberg, the Ballon d'Or footballer, had been there. Now, she chose a route which is directly in line with many things you explain, many achievements that you logged during your career, because you articulately stood up for the betterment of your peers, the squad, in terms of pay, treatment, centralised contracts. I'm not going to... It's pejorative to say shop steward now, because that's viewed as something, but you advocated things that would advance the case of people other than yourself.
Mm.
Put yourself at risk for that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But you never had to quite go to the length that Ada felt she had to. She'd been absolutely clear-cut about why she wouldn't play for Norway. And she described her time with the national team as deeply depressing, giving her nightmares and leaving her mentally broken. This is somebody who, if you... I've met her twice, watched her play... if you look at what she wrote in Players Tribune about the treatment of that idiot at the Ballon d'Or, it was uplifting and brilliant.
Mm.
I mean, she is one impressive person. But she chose not to go to the World Cup in order to demonstrate her case, in order to try and change things too. Given that you did, you aimed at certain things that are similar, but you didn't choose that action. Do you think she did the right thing, the wrong thing? What would you have done in her situation?
It's so difficult because, you know, a lot of these issues are individual issues that, when dealt with, can change the course of the entire team. But what we often deal with in women's football is a group of players that aren't ready to risk their modest contracts to stand for something that doesn't pay their mortgage. That's the reality of it. I think Ada Hegerberg benefits in the sense that, as I said before, she is, you know, as Colin Kaepernick is, as probably I am, as Megan Rapinoe is, she's a force because of she transcends sport. She's now become someone that represents far more than just being a goal scorer. And I think in the long run, you benefit from that. It's really up to Norwegian FA to decide how much of an impact her action is going to take. I felt from working on the World Cup that it was very much similar to my situation, where it was very much, let's paint Ada Hegerberg out to be the one that has an issue.
I watched American panels talking about it, and I thought they were saying was a disgrace.
I wasn't on the show, the actual particular show, when they were talking about it, but I remember watching it thinking, her agent messaged me and said, listen, you need to tell Fox that, first of all, they've got their facts wrong, and two, like, you know, what happened to kind of respecting the position of a player?
Researching it. They were factually wrong. If you're going to opine, I think you probably stand for free speech, and you could have sat there and listened to somebody say something that you completely disagreed with. As long as they'd done their work, I have a different view. But it sounded like it was a closed book before they came on air.
I think the problem is that, I mean, that's the first time I've heard the quote that you've read out.
Yeah.
I think the problem with Hegerberg's case is that, I wouldn't call it a problem, but I think maybe perhaps the uncertainty is that no one really knows the specific issue. With Hegerberg, we don't know whether it's a problem with the coach, whether it's a problem with the pay, whether it's... What is it? If we talk about pay, well, Norway kind of lead the way in terms of equality of pay because they've had an equal pay deal. So what is it? So I think in people's annoyance and actually, quite frankly, their entitlement of wanting to find out what it is, and I said this off stage, I said, we don't have to know what it is. Mm-hmm. Let's just respect her stance. Mm-hmm. For a player who's the best player in the world to say, I don't want to play in the World Cup, there's something going on, you know. Her sister also doesn't play for the national team, so you've got to ask questions there.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think you've seen a trend throughout women's football over the last 3-4 years of players and teams saying, we are not accepting this culture. New Zealand, Australia, Norway, Denmark, US, like the list goes on. They've all had sort of collective stances against their federations because women's football has accepted a culture for a long time of just mediocrity, poor management, and treating players poorly. That has to change. So I have a lot of respect obviously, and can relate to Hegerberg for her stance. How it will impact Norwegian football, I think it's up to the FA.
Certainly to Olympic Lyonnais' benefit that already sure. predominant.
But it's
she's
sad.
Had a summer
it's
off.
It's really sad.
I wanted to watch her, you know, because for anyone who doesn't understand,
it's really sad
where she's at. Like she had the opportunity to potentially be the best player at that World Cup. Potentially, I only say potentially.
And Norway were a strong team too. I mean. Yeah. I watched their game against Australia and I was like, this team could win the World Cup. Like, they were exceptional. But that was without Hegerberg. So it can work, you know. I think a lot of the team felt like they had to really perform to show the world that we don't need Hegerberg. So there's a lot going on there. I spoke to a psychologist about this recently and she said, you know, there's a lot of Stockholm syndrome in women's football where even if you know something's bad, there's an attachment to what is bad because you benefit from it.
If I go along with this, it won't get any worse. Whereas you have to take the risk against your kidnappers to say, this ain't right.
Yeah, that's perfect.
In your book, one of the contrary things is that until things go badly wrong under Mark Sampson and his coaching team, whenever you go and argue with the FA, or your recording of it is, they were willing to work with me. They listened. They were quite receptive. And they felt you were one of, in an extraordinary era, including the players who'd begun playing 7, 8, 9, 10 years before you. You've been part of an extraordinary era of brilliant English women footballers. It's the case, isn't it?
Mm.
It's no flattery on my part. I mean, I look back and you think, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then but you're one of their icons. And yet, when you write the book, I suspect it's cathartic. You've spent a lot of time thinking about it.
Yes, absolutely.
When you look back on that situation, how you're treated by your coach at national level, and then the process you have to go through and how you're subsequently treated by the FA, where are you at now? Because you often talk about trying to accrue wisdom.
Mm.
You're a brilliant mind. You're a first-class honours degree and a lawyer, practising lawyer in several different practices. Your deep faith, which conditions how you react to things in your life. You know, look back. What have you learned?
Well, this was a big thing, Graham, for the book, because we had to decide the tone of it. Whilst telling the entire story that's already well documented, there was a risk that I was pouring over your ground. There was a risk that I was crying over spilt milk. There was a risk that, well, this case is settled. Why are you still talking about it? But it's a huge part of my story and a huge part of my life and a huge part of who I am today. What I wanted to do was tell the story again, but also give insight into how I felt at those moments and how what someone says is one thing, how you feel about it stays with you. So really give the reader insight about how I felt, because a lot of the reporting at the time was like, she was called lazy, so he shouted at her in front of loads of people, so, and there was a lot of that. But I think in a book you can get the idea of the accumulation of that starts to have a real impact. So I think I was very, very careful to try as much as possible to tell the story, explain how I felt, but end it with, but now I can look these people in the eye genuinely and forgive them. And I've forgiven them. I've already forgiven them. And the whole, you know, there's a whole chapter on forgiveness, pretty much. The whole sort of epilogue.
Many people, particularly many people who operate in your sphere of sport, use ill-treatment as an incentive. You could have used that as fuel for many years to come. And I know many successful men and women who do use that rather than forgiving. I'm certain that if you've got that within you, either because of your personality, your upbringing, or your faith, I'm certain that there's a cleansing effect to forgiveness.
Yeah, I think faith...
But you could have used it differently and also successfully.
Well, I think faith very much dictates how I've used it. You know, I had to go through the pain and the anger and the bitterness, if you like, of you know, knowing that, okay, my England career was kind of cut short and this was a huge issue as a result of that. But then realising that really, actually, the more that lives in my head, the more it's only going to affect me.
Mm.
And how my faith, you know, reading the Bible, it talks about all of that. You have to get to the point where you rise above your adversaries. You have to get to the point where you can forgive and genuinely look someone in the eye and being like, you know what, I wish you the best. And also understand that the behaviour of people is often a product, they're products of their own environment, their own sad environment. It was super cathartic for me to go through that process and be like, you know what, actually, I have to let all of this go.
I do want to talk about my adoration for your brother. And you gave me a little clue and said that, yeah, I've got some fond memories of going up to Aberdeen, and it probably wasn't for tourism. well, it's a nice city, but it's not all that. What took you to Pittodrie to see your brother? Tell me about your brother's time at Aberdeen. I remember the Europa League.
Yeah.
I remember one of the great results in our history where he scored in a...
Well, Shawnee, he went on loan to Aberdeen at first from Birmingham, as you know, as young players do, to try and gain experience, and ended up being very good and stayed there, signed, and you know, became sort of a key player for Aberdeen. Liked Scotland, you know, had a Scottish girlfriend, and
you went and visited
all the time. Yeah,
really?
We went up for two Christmases actually, and took Christmas to him in Aberdeen. So I remember fond Christmases in Aberdeen.
No idea how proud I am. I'm delighted.
In a lovely sort of apartment complex. And,
brilliant.
And actually, there was a lot of kind of Nigerian expats in Aberdeen because of the oil. So we kind of had, you know, nice family friends that we can kind of cook with. And, you know, so I have very fond memories of Aberdeen. And then obviously he then went to Rangers, which was sort of, for him, playing for that big major, you know, Scottish club.
This is where I have to learn forgiveness.
And I think, honestly, looking at Shawnee's career, those were, you know, that was his purple patch for Rangers. It obviously sadly ended in administration, but in terms of, like, him being that player that could change the game, mm-hmm. his goal in the, against Celtic, mm-hmm. you know, where he's got the ball, he's dribbled his nutmegs and scored. I remember being at that game thinking, that's my brother, like.
Quite an atmosphere as well.
It was unreal.
Up there.
Like, it was unreal. So, really fond memories of Scotland.
Thank you.
Yes.
Before we close, what, I don't know Aaron Ramsey at all, but what do you anticipate? Because you often share facilities with the male team. I think there's a unifying, it appears that there's a unifying mentality right across this club. It doesn't matter whether you're playing male or female, but just like, I guess Aaron is coming to a special place, it seems to me. I've been here over many, many years in the old Comunale when they trained there with Lippi showing me and Tommy Burns, the Celtic manager, team tactics. I've been imbued with a certain sense of this is an extraordinarily special club, special city.
It is special because, I mean, it's existed since 1897, and I love history, so I love that. Like, you know, you're part of the fabric of, like, an entire city and an entire group of legends, and, you know, it's just something that's just so iconic. And I think now it's, you know, I recognise just the levels of excellence that are demanded, just through to, from the coaching through to the sports science, you know, the sports science here, I've never experienced in my career. Italian sports science is advanced in many ways than the rest of Europe. Everything that sort of makes football what it should be, you know, the history, the you know, the development of young players, the pursuit of excellence, is here.
You can reach out if he wishes it. You can reach out and just say, listen, I'm a year ahead of you. How can
Aaron Ramsey?
Yeah.
He will understand, I think, what it means to play for a big club. He played for Arsenal for such a long time, and in a way, I think maybe Juventus is a step up from Arsenal. In a sense, and the reason I say that is because at Arsenal I get the sense that it was okay if you didn't win anything.
Arsene Wenger specifically set up a top four culture is good enough.
And
I struggle with that.
Yeah, at Juventus I don't think that's...
Well, you better...
That doesn't fly.
No,
I mean,
it's not. No.
They've won,
it's not.
It's just... So I think Ramsey will hopefully be able to see the step up in mentality. I'm just talking about mentality now, club mentality, and that will push him to play. But I think the men's team have a lot of midfielders, so, you know, he has to get in the team. And you're seeing more English players do it. I love it.
It's thrilling.
Trippier going to Atletico. You know,
Jaden at Borussia Dortmund.
It's going to help.
Couldn't agree more.
It's going to help the England national team. And Gareth Southgate looks like the kind of guy that will encourage that.
Yeah.
Like the different cultures, the different pressures, the different languages. Being able to just have to communicate in a different way sharpens your mind.
Takes you out of any comfort zone you've ever been in.
And it really sharpens your mind.
Yeah.
All of that, it will stay with me. When I finish playing, all of this will stand me in good stead. You know, I've been quite open about saying, you know, when I finish playing, I want to sort of go in the sporting director role of being able to shape culture, recruit players, develop teams. I'm not really interested in being a coach, but I'm interested in sort of working with a coach to develop winning culture. And I genuinely feel like all of these experiences are going to only help me to have better conversations with players. So let's say in 5 years' time, I'm a sporting director of a club, and a foreign player comes to me and says, oh, you know what, I'm struggling finding somewhere to live, or I will understand how that feels.
Yeah.
And what better way to kind of understand and set myself up for future in just living the experience.
It's a thrilling prospect, and I'll just put my big nose and say I hope that by that stage Match of the Day or Sky are still competing to either draw you away from that or have you in a part-time contract, because irrespective of whether you're working analysing women's football or male football, you're very good at it. You do your prep, but also you impact, and I think that we're in an era where that too is on the rise.
Not
universally, because there's still footballers.
Yeah.
I can't speak for female footballers because the ones I've seen on television have so far stood out. But I work with some who just turn up, rock up and say,
right,
my opinion will be good
enough.
And research is vital. We know you do that. We also know that you're about to try and equal my, what did you call it, Neil? Olympic world record performance. When I read the audiobook of my two books, for those who did listen to it, yes, the night before I recorded the Spain audiobook, I had been out singing karaoke till 4 a.m. So if that's a suspicion, you've just had it confirmed. But you're about to go and continue audiobook reading. They don't teach this.
Yes.
Enjoy it. We have to let you go because the studio is waiting for you. That's a nice phrase to be able to say. Sorry, the studio is waiting. I have to go now. I suppose I end in a pretty stereotypical way by saying Forza Juve, Forza Eniola.
Thank you so much. Prego. Prego. Grazie. Grazie mille. Prego. Thank you for coming.
I do hope you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios, our members who support us. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day they're available, it's time for you to join us. To become a socio, and for only £2.99 per month, you'll get all our content entirely ad-free and ahead of its release on the main feed. Please go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast, and we'll blow virtual kisses toward you. Thank you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.